The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In Egypt, negotiations continue today for a ceasefire in Gaza. Now, yesterday there were hopes that a deal was done when Hamas agreed to the terms of a proposal. However, Israel refused to accept it. Meanwhile, as you heard on the news, it appears the Israeli Defense Forces have taken control of the Gaza side of the Rafah border crossing. Joining me now to talk about these developments is Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Camp.
Now, Israel has suggested this is just a ruse by Hamas to force Israel into a position where it would be the one to spoil the party. It would be the one turning down the peace initiative. Do you believe that's the case?
There may be an element of that with this, but it's worth remembering that there were Saudi press reports back on Saturday saying that Hamas would be offering a deal. And what appears to have happened is that Hamas has taken the outline of a deal put together by Qatar and Egypt, modified it slightly, and then sent it back as its offer, which does seem to be a fairly clear offer to move towards release of hostages. The Israelis have not accepted that. And we had the further complication that it came out almost at the same time as these Iranians were ordering 100,000 or more people to move away from a particular part of Rafah. What now appears to be the case is that the Israelis are using that move, the takeover of land inside the Rafah border, really in retaliation to a Hamas attack a couple of days ago, which killed four Israeli soldiers. So it's not yet clear that the Israelis are going to go for a full-scale ground assault into Rafah. That could still happen, but it would take time to get all the forces together. Meanwhile, you have talks continuing, but all the indications are that Netanyahu does not want to do a deal unless it is much tougher as far as Hamas is concerned, and Hamas believes it can hold out for a longer time. The essential problem here is that Netanyahu wants a long war. Biden, on the other hand, wants a short war. And at some stage, one of those two parties is going to have to change. But we don't see any sign of that right at the moment.
Do we know much about the deal that it seems was fashioned with the Qataris and the Egyptians? And then, as you say, the added input from Hamas altering the deal slightly. Do we know much about the shape of that deal?
No, not very much yet. I mean, there are rumours, etc. What we do know is that the Americans have the director of the CIA involved very closely. He may not be actually involved in negotiations, but he is there in much more than the background. So whatever was proposed was thought by Washington to have at least a chance of being acceptable. And there's no doubt that behind the scenes, there will be heavy pressure being put on Netanyahu at the moment. As far as one can tell, it does involve a release of 30-plus hostages. That's most of the remaining elderly or sick people and women who are actually held, but it does not involve the release of all of them. We simply don't know how many hostages are still alive in Hamas's hands. There are reports of 30 or more being killed in Israeli air raids and the rest. So there may only be about 60 or 70 still, so to speak, available. And it is highly unlikely that Hamas will release any serving soldiers in the IDF, or at least any male serving soldiers in the IDF among those hostages, until basically the war comes to an end on terms which it too deems as satisfactory. So we're in a pretty complex situation at the moment. But it's a long answer to your question. No, we do not know the detail, but it goes a fair bit farther than Hamas was basically willing to do before.
Now, Joe Biden is under immense pressure at home because the scenes on the university campuses where, you know, police forces have been brought in. Columbia University has cancelled their commencement ceremonies, which are their graduation ceremonies. So it's the kind of thing Joe Biden does not need in an election year. But he knows that, you know, memories are relatively short. And if this ceasefire could be brokered and persist from maybe now or next month up to the election, it would probably dissipate as a key electoral issue. So that's the pressure on him.
That's the pressure on him. And basically what he would like as a minimum is a long pause. And I mean, I think I'd agree with you in what you say. You know, a potential pause of 2 or 3 months would be serious. As far as Netanyahu is concerned, that is almost tantamount to admitting that the Israeli Defense Forces cannot defeat Hamas. And this is the real problem for Netanyahu. We were now, 7 months into the war, and Hamas is still there. There are elements in Hamas in northern Gaza, which, you know, we have been told repeatedly the Israelis just got clear completely. And you have this extraordinary incident in which they actually killed 4 Israeli soldiers using rocket fire. So it's really a situation in which Netanyahu is determined to continue for as long as he can. But Biden, as you say, needs to get out of this. But he needs to get out of it in a kind of acceptable way across the American political spectrum. And that includes...
Right across the political spectrum, you were saying?
Yes, and that includes not just the Democrats, many young Democrats who are really very strong in their support for Gaza, but also the Israel lobby, including the many millions of Christian Zionists. So essentially, he has to try to appeal to both groups, if you like, at the same time, or at least certainly the Democrats, the young Democrats, but to some extent, at least limit the support that Trump has from his own people who basically support Israel to the hilt.
Now, looking at the Hamas tactic, last week, a particular consignment of weaponry was deemed not to be delivered by the Americans to the Israelis. I'm not sure whether that was seen as a punishment to the Israelis for not listening to them or whether there was a technical reason for that cessation of a particular delivery, maybe just a rap across the knuckles from the Biden administration to show Netanyahu that the support is not indefinitely unconditional.
Well, let's put it this way. If it was sort of due to some sort of technical problem, then it is still a reminder to the Israelis about how dependent they are on the United States and how quickly that tap could be turned off. We simply don't know the details of that. It may well be a technical issue, but it is that reminder. The real issue is whether Biden will go that far to actually say to the Israelis, either you do this or this will follow. And maybe this was a hint to remind the Israelis that, you know, he does have a lot of power. The reality is that the United States is by far the largest supplier of arms to Israel. Germany is significant, Britain is significant, but Britain is relatively small beer in this, although there's some key things which are made in Britain, some of them by Israeli-owned companies that are still getting through. But no, the United States is the key one here, but for the time being at least, we're not at all sure just how far the pressure will go from Biden to insist that Netanyahu actually comes up with at least a longish-term ceasefire.
The reaction of the people in the Gaza Strip yesterday, the pictures were of joy unconfined on the streets, even as in parts of Rafah, the leaflets were dropping, telling people this is the safe zone, the red zone is where we're going to send in our artillery and our bombardment by rocketry. You move to the beige zone or the yellow zone and you will be safe. So that was one set of video pictures we were seeing. And then on the other hand, when news of Hamas agreement to a ceasefire, literally people were dancing on the streets.
They were. And it indicates, I think, the sort of the pent-up feeling of relief at any possibility. One suspects that many Palestinians in Gaza, many Gazans, would have been pretty suspicious, but at least for the moment it seemed to be something to celebrate. What is not clear is how the reaction is developing in Israel itself, because if it looked possible to get some kind of ceasefire of maybe a month or even 2 months, but release of at least 30 hostages, then there's going to be a pretty powerful movement within Israel to actually insist that some deal is done. But as we know, the two sort of far-right parties within Netanyahu's coalition are absolutely against that and are threatening to withdraw from the coalition, which would mean Israel goes into a general election or at least a change of leader.
And the question is, if the war does not continue and there's a cessation, I mean, is Netanyahu toast anyway?
I think he could be, but, you know, Netanyahu has had an extraordinary survival capability over many years. So I don't think one will rule anything out. And as I say, once the war comes to even a sort of a 2 to 3 month end, it will be very difficult for Netanyahu to start again. And meanwhile, the one thing which I think people are tending to forget is right across the Middle East, there is huge public anger at what has been going on for the last few months, trepidation on the part of many of the more autocratic leaders at what is happening in their own countries because there is criticism being directed at them. But beyond that, one has to remember that Hamas is proving extremely difficult to control, as Netanyahu wants. And we always had to remember that the terrible attacks of the 7th of October were a glaring example of Israeli inefficiency. So Israel depends hugely on being able to present this picture of being sort of completely secure. And that has been knocked twice, both on the 7th of October and also now with the persistence of Hamas. That changes things psychologically across the Arab world, I think, a lot more than people are realizing.
How is Hamas continuing to survive as a military force? I mean, did they spend the last decade or two building supplies of rockets that would last for a very prolonged war? They still have that kind of capability, or is somehow, are they being supplied, or have they got an indigenous manufacturing capability?
They certainly have an indigenous manufacturing capability for relatively crude weapons, and they have had for a long time. You know, quite a small workshop can be possible for this. How many of those survive is a very different matter because, of course, of all the bombardment there's been and all the destruction. But Hamas has a very wide network of tunnels. It's reckoned to be 250 to 300 kilometers in length, and one simply doesn't know how many of those have actually been uncovered and taken over by the Israelis. But the indications are that even now, Hamas manages to keep probably between 40 and 70 hostages alive in spite of this occupation. And also it manages to have at least four regiments of its own paramilitaries, a very loose term regiment in this case, still active. And that is within Gaza. And meanwhile, the support for Hamas may be pretty tenuous in Gaza because of all the suffering, but it is growing by the week in the occupied territories of the West Bank.
There was piece in the Sunday Times yesterday written by a man called Ahmed Fuad Al-Khatib, who grew up in Gaza and who lost 31 family members to Israel in this conflict. And he says, yet Hamas was not only a violent spoiler, it proselytized viciously against the concept of peace, something I remember in summer camps, schools, Friday sermons, online media, protests and various venues and outlets that brainwashed large segments of Palestinian society. Many believe Gaza was this unbelievably awful place before October the 7th, an unrelenting prison with nothing in it worth living for. They then conclude that Hamas's horrendous attack was a legitimate reaction to Israeli policies that made Gaza a concentration camp. But then he goes on to say that Gaza was a lovely place to live prior to October 7th.
Well, you get very different views of that. He may be right to an extent. It depends very much who you are in Gaza. It's certainly true that within Gaza, there were pretty successful people, business people and others, that it was not all problematic. But on the other hand, you know, I've supervised students from Gaza coming in to do postgraduate work, and life has been pretty difficult generally. And it's certainly true that I think in the Israeli war of against Gaza, I think all 10 of the higher education colleges and universities in Gaza have either been destroyed or severely damaged. So education possibilities are becoming much more limited. But it's a view. And I mean, I think one has to recognize that Hamas itself has been extremely tough and in many ways brutal in what it's done. And that includes the 7th of October. We should not sort of believe that sort of Hamas is the sort of, you know, the savior of Palestinians. But the reality is that Hamas itself is increasing its popularity in the occupied territories. That, I think, is, you know, there's been independent research by good Palestinian academics who are indicating that. And I've talked to one or two people recently who can confirm that.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.